For December 8th, 2016, it's the Lullabot Podcast. It's the Lullabot Podcast, episode 201. I'm Matt Cleave, senior developer at Lullabot. With me, as always, front-end dev co-host of the show, Mike Herschel.
Ooh, Mike Herschel.
Hey, Mike.
Good morning, Matt.
Good morning, Mike.
How are you doing?
Great. We're getting off the island today. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times we end up talking about Drupal or things that Lullabot does. Since this is the Lullabot Podcast, we generally talk about things that Lullabot does, right?
Yeah, like Drupal, JavaScript-y type stuff.
What's Lullabot, Mike?
Lullabot's a web development agency that is probably about the best web development agency in the world, if I do say so myself. Has about 60-odd employees, all remote, all spread out all over the world.
Yeah, absolutely. And a lot of times we end up doing web development in the Drupal world. And, you know, often in the last couple of years, we hear more and more when we go to Drupal events of people saying, hey, we need to get off the island. We need to learn things from other communities, other open source projects, you know, other proprietary technologies, you know, learn other things and see how we can apply that kind of thing to Drupal. So today we're actually going to do a little bit of that kind of learning.
Yep. Our very first guest here is Matt Stauffer. He is the host of the Laravel podcast and the 5-Minute Geek Show podcast. He is a partner at Titan, and he is the author of a brand new O'Reilly book called Laravel Up and Running. He's known as Stauffer Matt on Twitter, and he is from the best town in the whole world, Gainesville, Florida.
Whoop, whoop.
Yep. Welcome, Matt Stauffer. How you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. Thanks.
So just to be clear here, Matt, you're going to play the role of Laravel expert today.
I'll do my best.
All right. With us, we have some other experts from Lullabot. We have senior architect at Lullabot, who's the Drupal Composer Module Maintainer. He's the creator of the Trusty Lamp, an easy-to-use Vagrant base box on GitHub with everything you need for debugging and profiling. His Laravel experience includes visiting the Laravel website once, and he thought it was pretty. From the great white north of Ontario, Canada, it's Andrew Barry. Hey, Andrew.
Hey, Matt. Glad to be here.
Welcome back.
And finally, we have... senior back-end developer here at Lullabot has also wrote a book called Princess Hiccup. And if you don't mind, Matt Stauffer, like, I really think Matt Robinson's illustrations were much better.
The name is better as well.
Yeah. Matt has actually attended a Laracon in Louisville, his hometown of Louisville, in 2016. Welcome, Matt Robinson.
Hello. Happy to be here.
You know, Mike always mispronounces things. I think he needs to say Louisville correctly.
Yeah. We discussed that. Louisville. Is that correct?
Close enough.
I think you need to grunt through it a little bit.
So I was like, hell no, that's incorrect.
So, guys, we're talking Laravel today, which is a PHP framework, and that's kind of the end of my knowledge. So we're just going to kind of dig in and learn what we can, and Matt's going to walk us through. Matt Stauffer is going to walk us through and tell us a little bit. Teach us some. So, Matt, if you don't mind, just kind of giving us the high level, what is Laravel?
Yeah, Laravel is a rapid application development framework in PHP. It is a little bit of a full stack framework because it has some gulp and some other front end stuff going on. But at its core, it's the easiest way to describe it, and it's definitely imperfect, is sort of like the Rails of PHP.
Oh, that's interesting. So how does a framework such as Laravel differ than Drupal? Is there like a Laravel CMS or anything like that?
Yeah, you could theoretically build a CMS. I mean, there's plenty of CMSs built in Laravel. There's at least a half dozen. But Drupal is a whole bunch of components built together to kind of give you the foundation skeleton of a CMS, whereas you could use something like Laravel to build a CMS. And a lot of CMSs are built, like CodeIgniter was used to build Expression Engine, stuff like that. So usually frameworks are a little bit lower level. They don't have any kind of pre-built UI components. They're more to be used to build things like CMSs or like APIs or like something else.
So why would somebody use Laravel? What's kind of the big benefit of using Laravel compared to Symfony or a CMS or something like that?
Yeah, I think the biggest comparison is something like Symfony or, you know, Cake or CodeIgniter would be because you like the way that Laravel thinks. So Laravel is a rapid application development framework. It's got a lot of opinions out of the box, and it's more kind of convention over configuration, if you're familiar with that phrase. So a lot of the things kind of, it uses Symfony components and it has its own components, but by default, it already kind of set things up a certain way, so you don't have to reset your expectations every time. Usually, if the question is why Laravel versus a CMS, or really why a backend framework with a CMS, it's can you do everything that you want to do in a CMS without really kind of forcing the CMS to do things that aren't its natural way of thinking. And if so, if it works with the CMS, then you as a CMS. So Laravel's more, or frameworks like that are more for when you find yourself basically like twisting the arm of your CMS to do something, it might be time for a more bespoke framework.
So as far as like the basis of Laravel, I mean, it's a LAMP stack? Yeah. Normal?
Well, I mean, it doesn't have to be LAMP, right? So it works with, but it works with MySQL, it works with Postgres, it works with Mongo, it works with whatever you want. It is PHP, but there's Windows users. A lot of the folks who use it and its own server provisioner uses Nginx, but it works fine with Apache as well. So really the only thing it forces is PHP.
You mentioned it makes decisions for you, or it has some strong opinions. Could you maybe talk to us about what some of those opinions are and why they're good?
Yeah, absolutely. So some of the opinions are, this is the way we're going to do things. And some of the opinions are, here's a good place to start, but you can customize it if you want. So some of its opinions about this is just how it's going to be are, for example, it's going to use the Symfony HTTP request stack. If you try to take that out, you're basically going to not be using Laravel anymore. So those are some decisions that are made. And in Drupal, it's made that same decision as well. So certain things, it's just, this is how we're going to do it. Similarly, it comes with a whole bunch of components out of the box that you could replace if you want. But in general, if you're using Laravel, you're probably using Laravel's Illuminate components, like for session and cache. So some of them are just, this is the way it's going to go. And the best way to describe how Laravel works in those spaces is it tends to be very simple, very expressive APIs that focus on it working as legible, as readable a way as possible, try to mimic kind of natural language versus really kind of hyper-configurable, super crazy stuff that requires 50 lines of code to do a simple thing. So Laravel definitely has a lot of opinions in the simple direction. And in my book, I wrote this, that Laravel kind of leans, so PHP, you could be a more Ruby-like PHP developer, or you could be a more Java-like PHP developer. And if it's Java, it's going to be very verbose. And if it's Ruby, it's going to be very concise. Well, Laravel tends in the Ruby direction a little bit more. So that's maybe like the harder opinions. That's just kind of at the core of Laravel. I think the places that you're going to be able to configure it a little bit more are, for example, by default, the views are going to be a certain directory. And the tests are going to be set up a certain way with a certain naming structure. And it's going to follow PSR2, if you're familiar with that. By default, it's expecting that your SAS files are in a certain place and your JavaScript files are a certain place and you're using a certain JavaScript processor or something like that. All those things are set up out of the box. And a lot of people say, every time I install a new Laravel app, I then change those things, which you're free to do. But it, rather than, if you're using something like Symfony, it doesn't make any of those assumptions. So if you just like having your CSS or your SAS a certain place, every Symfony app, you have to reset it up that way. With every Laravel app, it's already set up. And so if you're willing to just say, the way Laravel does it by default, then all of a sudden that's now one less thing you have to do in every single app. And so there's a whole bunch of those decisions that are already made out of the box in the skeleton.
You mentioned Views. Is it an honest-to-goodness MVC framework?
Yeah, I mean, MVC is a little bit of a misnomer only because MVC makes some assumptions about what a model is usually. So if you're familiar with, for example, CodeIgniter's models, they're not at all like that. But it has models, it has controllers, and it has views, and the models are Active Record style. So if you're familiar with Rails Active Record. So yeah, I would say, it's MVC.
So does Laravel have the equivalent of a contrib ecosystem? Is there a package repository? Are packages like Symfony bundles?
Sort of. So contrib and also Symfony bundles, they make some assumptions that when you create a package for the overlying kind of ecosystem, it's going to be shaped a certain way. The way you distribute Laravel packages is through Packagist. And if you're not familiar with that, it's Composer's basically global repository for anything that can be installed anywhere. So even the core packages that form Laravel, the Illuminate components are distributed on packages and can be used anywhere. And I actually have a project called Torch that is basically directions on how to use the Illuminate components in non-Laravel projects. So everything in Laravel except for the base, the thing that happens when you do Laravel new, which is kind of like where are the folders and all that, almost everything that is ever in Laravel core, and the same is true for external projects, or external packages, is just distributed through that. There is something called Packalist that is trying to basically be a subset of Packagist just for Laravel. I don't use it. I don't know anybody who does, but maybe there's a whole bunch of people who use it. But in general, it's just, they're composer packages and that's it. One thing worth noting is that There's a concept of a service provider in Laravel, which is basically the ability to define some things about your generic PHP package that is specifically going to boot at a certain time or whatever. And those are usually where the very Laravel tailored aspects of your package live. And so if somebody wants to make a, for example, like a, there's an OAuth server package that's not Laravel specific, someone might make a OAuth server for Laravel bridge package. And really all it does is bring in the OAuth server via Composer and then provide a service provider that registers it and boots it for you, and just as a convenience thing. But in general, we don't have a specific kind of package structure. We don't have the concept of bundles or anything like that.
So it sounds like most of these packages are really sort of almost like they're basically API sets of functionality. Is there anything in Laravel which would try and sort of push up a little bit more towards maybe some sort of, you know, user interface or you know, functionality that's less about developers and more about, you know, people who are building or managing websites?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the things is you have the kind of Laravel-based CMSs. And so those tend to be a little bit less a package and a little bit more like a skeleton that imports Laravel as one of its things. But as package dependencies of Laravel, there are definitely some tools that have views, including one of the native Laravel packages that it exposes. So quite a few of the Laravel packages don't come in skeleton by default, but it make it really easy to add it. So one of them is Cashier, which makes it really easy to add Stripe-based subscriptions to your sites. But there's another one called Passport, which makes it very easy to add an OAuth 2 server to your site. And any OAuth 2 server needs to have some basic views along administering who has access to your server and creating new client tokens and just the general approval flow. When somebody on some other site wants to authenticate against your site with OAuth 2, they have to see a little page that says, do you want to allow blah, blah, blah to have access to your other blah, blah, blah. And so that even that native component exposes, we call it publishing, it publishes views into your views directory that you can then customize to your heart's content. So not, I would say the majority of packages don't expose views, but it's perfectly possible and plenty of them do.
Are these packages that you're talking about, like Cashier and stuff, are those official Laravel packages, or a lot of them someone just contributed by the community or worked on by the community, things like that?
Yeah, Laravel has a few official packages. So Scout indexes your database models in something like Elasticsearch so that it's very easy to do full-text search. Cashier does that, and then Passport does OAuth2, and I'm missing a few. But so there's probably five or six official Laravel packages that don't – oh, yeah, Echo makes it really easy to do WebSockets. So there's five or six official Laravel packages that don't come in the core. So I would say, like, in Laravel, there's a Symfony core components and other, you know, PHP Fig and other core components that Laravel uses that are from someone else but come out of the box. There's the Illuminate components, which is stuff like session and cache and routing, which are very core to Laravel, but you could use somewhere else. There's the official third-party packages, or the official Laravel packages that don't come out of the box. And these are things like Cashier and Passport. They are created by Laravel, but you might not want them in every package or on every app, so they don't come out of the box. And then finally, D or 4 or whatever it was, there's a whole bunch of other people creating these community packages, and they just publish them on Packagist and say, hey, go check it out. So, and those are, you know, anybody can create them. Titan, where I work, we've created three or four of them. There's nothing that makes them formal or informal other than we just say, hey, Laravel people, go use this.
And where do you say that? Like, where does the Laravel community communicate?
Twitter. There's no formal registry of them, but again, the Packalist site intends to be that. But usually we communicate to each other and share these things primarily over Twitter, or, you know, I cover a lot of them on my blog, or LaravelNews.com covers it. We save some Laravel podcasts, but there's no kind of official central repository of Laravel tailor packages, in part because half the time when I use something, even if somebody's made a Laravel bridge for it, it seems unnecessary, and I just bring the original PHP package in. So the vast majority of the dependencies in Laravel apps that I use are just PHP composer packages from packages. They're not Laravel specific packages.
That's interesting. So let's talk about the history of Laravel. Has Laravel always been built off of Symfony components? How long has it been around?
Laravel started, I think it was in 2011. I should have my book in front of me as my reference point. And it was originally kind of like a competitor or a... Well, there was a whole world of people who kind of spun off from CodeIgniter. CodeIgniter originally kind of brought MVC, somewhat Rails-inspired MVC, to the PHP world.
My ignorance is showing. Can you explain CodeIgniter for me?
So Rails was extracted from Bootcamp. Similarly, CodeIgniter was extracted from Expression Engine. And it was kind of one of the early MVC, somewhat Rails-inspired frameworks, and it had this really, really thriving community where they were sharing documentation with each other. It was really lively. But CodeIgniter was owned by Ellis Labs, who made Expression Engine. And everything went through them, and when they got really busy on something else, they didn't really care to work on CodeIgniter, and so the CodeIgniter community would be very excited about it, and Ellis Labs wouldn't, and so it just kind of like fizzled. And through just the drama and the kind of disappointment of that, a whole bunch of people said, you know what, CodeIgniter is not going anywhere, it's not modernizing, let's go off and do our own thing. And so three or four or five frameworks spun off from that area. Some of them were forks, some of them were just inspired. And Laravel is one of them. And we went through Laravel 1, Laravel 2, Laravel 3 very quickly. And it was all kind of basically hand-rolled. Composer wasn't a thing then. The Symfony components weren't really common. And in Laravel 4, which came out, I think it was 2.5 years ago. Again, sorry, I don't have the numbers in front of me. It was a complete rewrite from scratch. And that was the point at which a lot of the original kind of desires and code styles and whatever, they persisted. But the code basically as a whole just went away. And, I was pretty new to Laravel at that point, but Taylor and a few other contributors basically, decided on the Symfony stack, decided on PHP Unit, decided on Composer, and then wrote the Illuminate components for anything that they weren't happy with what existed anywhere else. And again, at that point, there's probably a half dozen, maybe a few more Illuminate components. So.
So what's the core development module or model like? Maybe core is the wrong term, but for the people who are working on Laravel itself, like, is there a group of people who each have their own subsystem they work with? Is there a process where, like, if I just want to submit code that I have to go through, like, how does that work?
Yeah, Taylor is definitely the I forget that term, but the benevolent dictator for life, BDFL, of Laravel for sure. So everything goes through him, everything comes from him. That having been said, there's a large group of people who regularly contribute pull requests to the code, and these are often high-level features that make a significant shift in the API of Laravel that they came up with on their own. So there's many contributors who have anything from, hey, I fixed a typo or added a quick test here, the whole way up to, I added a very significant feature that merits its entire separate page in the documentation. In the end, however, all of it goes through Taylor. Taylor has hired someone, his name's Mohammed, and he does about half of his time, I don't know if this is perfect, but he does part of his time helping Taylor with the paid products like Forge and Envoyer, and part of his time basically developing out big features or whatever. Sometimes things where Taylor doesn't have the ability to kind of really focus on one feature for 3 weeks at a time, but he can have Mohammed do it. And so then Taylor, because Taylor's doing customer support and he's organizing conferences and he's writing code and he's reviewing bugs and doing documentation. So it's difficult for him to go head down. So Mohammed will do a lot of that. But in general, when you think about the development that's happening for Laravel, it's basically Taylor either writing the code or reviewing somebody else's code, and he ends up merging it. He ends up deciding the release schedule and stuff like that. But there's quite a few people who are either the triagers of issues. There's quite a few people who just kind of spend a lot of time just doing that. There's a internals GitHub doc where a lot of the proposals come up before they actually, someone writes the code. So someone says, well, what do you think about this? And someone else will say, actually, you can do that with this package. Or, they'll say, yeah, but what if it would be better if it's in core, and then Taylor will weigh in or something like that. And so there's a pre kind of conversation about what happens. But in the end, someone pull requests and Taylor accepts it or not. So
you mentioned the paid products, Forge and Envoy. What are those and how does that work?
Yeah. So Forge is a VPS kind of manager. And so you will hook up your DigitalOcean or AWS credentials or something like that. Or you can have a pre-existing Ubuntu VPS. And Forge gives you the tools that make it really easy for you to manage certain things like which sites are set up there and setting up your hosts to direct to it correctly, spinning up, a Beanstalk queue worker or something like that, database access, managing your SSH keys, setting up Let's Encrypt or other SSH keys, all the kind of the general things that you do to manage your sites on a VPS you handle yourself. Forge does that for you. And so what it does is it provides a really nice user interface where relatively technically competent people who are not full-time DevOps folks can manage their own VPS servers without having to pay some external service to do it. So Forge is, I don't know what its price is right now, but it's somewhere in the $10 to $20 a month for all your servers, like one time payment, and you cover as many servers as you want kind of thing, versus you're paying more and more and more per box. Okay, so $15 a month for individuals for all these things. So I pay $15 a month and I can spin up 500 DigitalOcean servers for all my different clients and stuff like that, and it gives me a UI for all that kind of stuff. Envoyer is zero downtime, kind of Capistrano style deployment. So it's similar to Forge in that it's allowing you to kind of set up your deployment on your servers. But Envoyer doesn't set up your servers for you, and it's all about deciding what the deployment structure and response stuff like that is for your site. So let's say you've got a staging site and you got two production sites that are load balanced or something like that. You can tell Envoyer, well, when I push up to the develop branch of this GitHub repo, then deploy it. And like Capistrano, it deploys it to like a single release directory, and then it will basically like run whatever your build scripts are or something like that. And once the build scripts are done running, then it symlinks that into your actual publicly served directory. So that's why it's zero downtime. But you can say, when I push the develop branch, push to that server. When I push to the production branch, push over to that server, and then symlink this and run that. And you can set up basically in a UI, again, you can build this whole flow of what things happen every time I push. And then it also shows you how the deployment is running. And if you have any problems, you can always do a quick rollback. So it's a UI for a more complicated build and deploy process for relatively complex kind of production systems.
So these are two products that are built and managed by Taylor's company?
Yep.
What's it called? Yeah, what's that called?
I guess it's just Laravel LLC.
Ah, okay. Right on. There's no confusion there.
Yeah, and you may have heard of Laracast. Laracast is separate. It is kind of like a high-level community idea, and I guess I could just share that now. Laracast is run by Jeffrey Way, who's one of the big teachers in the Laravel world. And it's interesting because if you go to, you know, Laravel or something like that, you'll basically see Envoyer, Forge, Laracasts. So you'd think Laracast is, but it's really just, it's such a great teaching resource that it gets that kind of high-level access. And so that's a separate for-profit business run by Jeffrey Way, doing basically a video tutorial every day in the Laravel world. He does front-end, he does back-end, just 5 to 10 minute videos kind of stuff. So that's not run by Taylor, but Forge and Envoyer are.
Mike, I've got some bad news for you.
What's that?
I can no longer call you the pride of Gainesville, Florida. I think Matt Stauffer is going to take that title. We're talking with Matt about Laravel. He's dropping some Laravel knowledge on a few Drupal developers. We'll get into it a little bit further coming up right after this.
Hello.
Hey, Amber.
Oh, hi.
Funny, I didn't see you over there.
Fancy to meet you here.
It's a production manager and trainer from Drupalize Me, Amber Matz. How you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
Wonderful. So today on the podcast, we're learning all about Laravel. And, you know, as it turns out, Laravel has a website where people can go watch Laravel videos.
I've heard about that.
Drupal has one of those websites, too.
Yeah, well, we have that, too. So
DrupalEyes.me, right?
That's correct.
Tell me what's going on there.
Well, we've been working on our Drupal 8 module development guide. We get a lot of requests for that. So currently on the site, we've got a theming guide and migration or upgrading guide, and we've been working on the module development series. So we've got a bunch of new tutorials on the site lately. Joe Schindelar has been working on plugins and events. So we've got some tutorials on extending Drupal 8 with events and how to use the plugin system, and also some support material like related to that. So like annotations and using Drupal console and things like that. So want to check out the blog for the latest and greatest, or just click on the tutorials link to find out what's new there. And I've been working on our configuration management tutorials, getting those updated. So we've done a major overhaul of this series. We first published this series right after Drupal 8, and we've overhauled. We had an external technical review by Matthew Tift, who's one of the co-maintainers of the configuration system. It was really nice to have that external technical review process as part of our updating process. So that was really cool, and we're going to be doing that moving forward. We added videos for all of the tutorials, and then I also updated the videos where needed, so did some re-recording, and also updated a bunch of written tutorials and even added some new ones there too. So there's still a little bit of work to do, but the series is updated, and you should check it out if you want to learn more about the configuration system. It's both for the workflow of configuration management, so syncing your configuration between instances of the same site, and also as a module developer, leveraging the configuration system. So getting configuration into your module, leveraging that configuration data, so settings forms and utilizing configuration entity data in a form and things like that. So really cool stuff. So check out our new tutorials at drupalize.me/tutorials. And we're adding tutorials every week.
So if you're a Drupal user and you're looking at this Drupal 8 thing saying, oh my goodness, I don't know what I'm doing. This is all so different. Drupalize Me sounds like it's a pretty good resource.
Yeah, and we've also got a lot of supporting material. If you're new to object-oriented PHP, we partner with KNP University, and we've got some great content on learning some of these object-oriented PHP concepts too. So we're here for you to help you learn Drupal and help you get up to speed with Drupal 8. And if you're looking to upgrade your Drupal site to Drupal 8, then you should definitely check out our Drupal 8 migration guide.
Thanks, Amber.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Welcome back. We're on the Lullabot podcast, but we're not talking about Drupal today. We're talking about Laravel with Matt Stauffer. And we actually have a couple Matts on here with Matt Robison, Matt Cleave, and Andrew Berry, who's an honorary Matt. anyway, I have a funny story. You mentioned that I am not the best in Gainesville anymore. I was at a conference in Pittsburgh. And so I'm talking to this woman, and I mentioned I'm from Gainesville, and she's like, "Oh, do you know Matt Stauffer? He's from Gainesville." And I said, "Yes, of course I know Matt Stauffer. Everybody in Gainesville knows Matt Stauffer." And then she proceeded to talk a whole bunch of smack about you, and I had to keep her from kicking me in the shin. But yeah, so that's the story.
That's
good. So Matt Robison, you have been to Laracon and you have been to DrupalCons. Tell us about how you perceive the community, the conference, and maybe differences that stood out to you.
I went to Laracon 2016 in Louisville because it was right in my backyard, and had a really good time. The community is really friendly. It was a smaller conference compared to DrupalCon. And so it felt a little more intimate. There's a lot of good general knowledge and stuff going on. Lots of free drinks and beer afterwards.
Oh, I need to head to this.
So it's a developer conference. I mean, were the sessions very technical, or what kind of things were going on?
It was a mix. You had some technical sessions, some generals for that were broad range in their scope that anyone could benefit from, any developer, like test-driven development. And we also had some more soft things like about design and motivation and things like that, which were also enlightening.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a good conference. I'm definitely glad I went. I met a few people. Every person I met at an after party, none of them were from the United States, which is pretty funny. So there's someone from Egypt, from Canada, from Nigeria, from Australia. It's like it was a pretty diverse group.
That's pretty awesome.
And yeah, it was a lot of fun.
So were there code sprints at Laracon?
There were not. That's one thing I was curious about, and it was sort of missed because that's how you get to know people, I think.
Yeah.
Kind of bumping elbows with them, getting into the nitty gritty. I was wondering, that's one question I want to ask is there any plans for code sprints or hackathons at conferences, you know, at the beginning of it or at the end, things like that?
Yeah. And just to give you like the background on that, Matt Stauffer, at Drupal cons, we have a tradition of code sprints where there'll be a smaller code sprint prior to the conference and a large code sprint after the conference. And we'll have, you know, upwards of like 500 plus people doing the code sprints. And it's very well organized where there's a group of, you know, mentors that will go around, and they're actively trying to get like first time people, you know, to log in, you know, to set up Git, to pull in the latest, you know, the latest branch and to commit that back. And then, you know, with our process in Drupal, you know, everything's taking place on Drupal.org, and there's a certain procedure. So to walk them through that. And it's also a great networking opportunity. It's a great place, you know, it gives you an opportunity to help people. It gives you opportunity to learn from people. And it gives you opportunity to become friends with people.
Does something like that exist in the Laravel community?
A little bit. We've talked about the, and I, just for what it's worth, I'm not in any formal leadership role in the Laravel community. I just talk, but I do talk. And so one of the things that I've heard is that Taylor's considered doing a little more hackathon style stuff, because I don't think that, I don't know if your code sprints are contributing to core or just getting people to build their own things, but I think he's talked about hackathons building their own things and considered it. Usually the biggest concern is just kind of thinking about how long people are going to be there. Laracons usually are 2, max 3 days, and so I think that it would require maybe making a little bit of a foundational shift to just how long the conference is and how much of a commitment it is to folks. I know it's Cross's brain. I don't know if it's going to happen for sure. I don't think I mean, I've heard Laravel meetups do hackathons for sure, but I don't think there's any formalized structures around it.
Yeah, the bigger sprints, there's usually formalized, like, these are the tasks that people are working on, and it could be a porting a contrib module to the latest version of Drupal, or it could be, you know, working on Drupal core issues. But there's also, throughout the conference, like a coding lounge open, where a lot of times, you know, talking to people who might know more than you and learning from them and networking can go on. And it's I think it's useful in the Drupal community.
Well, I think Taylor's going to listen to this, because I'm going to send it to him afterwards. So, hey, Taylor.
Hey, Taylor.
There's an idea.
Nice to meet you. It's a bunch of Drupal nerds here. Hey.
Yeah, and if anyone's interested in, like, you know, cross-pollination and, like, finding out how we organize that, you know, the Drupal community is usually very, very open to sharing, you know, everything open source.
Hey, Matt Robison, you were talking about how some of the sessions at Laracon were fairly generic. Do you think any of that might have to do with how actually developing within Laravel you end up putting lots of individual components together, and they may be components that are just PHP components that have nothing to do with Laravel. So it ends up being kind of a more generic type workflow where if you're inside of Drupal, you're on the island. I don't know. I'm just throwing that out.
Yeah,
there.
Well, they definitely used. I mean, these talks were definitely Laravel specific in the sense where it was all within the context of Laravel. And the framework, of course, but the principles you could extrapolate from them, for instance, with like test-driven development, could be used somewhere else. You could take that and learn something from it and use it somewhere else.
Now, let me chip in one thing real quick there, if you don't mind. I think that one of the things about Laravel is that it allows you, even though I said it has a lot of opinions, almost everything in the entire framework can be swapped out with something else. Every aspect where the framework relies on one of the Illuminate components or a Symfony component, it relies on them using PHP interfaces, not directly on the class. And Taylor basically wrote out interfaces, he calls them the Illuminate contracts, for every single one of those core things. So there's plenty of people that have developed competing packages that expose that same interface to the core. And so even within core components, let alone the fact that we're also doing, you know, front-end work and stuff like that, it's very, very, very flexible as a foundation to use kind of whatever you want. So there's a lot of off the island, there's a lot of cross-pollination in just the core foundation of developing with Laravel as a whole. So I think you definitely are onto something there.
That sounds incredibly useful. That's cool.
So are contracts like just interfaces that you've got extra documentation or, you know, commitments around, or are they like groups of interfaces, or what are they exactly?
It's both. So a contract, so for example, if you're thinking about sessions, there's a group of contracts around how Laravel expects sessions to behave and what interfaces they should expose. And then by default, every new Laravel app uses the Illuminate version of those, you know, the Illuminate classes that implement those interfaces. But at any point, you could then say, well, I'm going to create a group of my own classes that implement those same interfaces, and I'll just bind those into the IOC container, into the inversion of control container, the dependency injection container, sorry. Now all of a sudden, I'm using my session driver instead of Laravel's.
That's really cool. I'm kind of excited to take a look at this.
Nice.
I'm getting a convert there.
I love it.
Something, you know, talking about like the conferences and so on, I know sort of in the Drupal community, like when we've had these conferences, they've sort of been these watershed moments sometimes where, you know, Drupal was one thing before and then all of a sudden there's some big announcement or some big site like the White House. I remember back in 2009, that was a big deal in the Drupal community to be like, wow, people are using us for real websites now. you know, versus all those fake websites we're spending our time building. Has there been moments like that in the Laravel community where it sort of all of a sudden felt like, you know, Laravel is this big thing, or, you know, is bigger than it was before, or these showcase websites where people are asking, like, where is Laravel? You just instantly go and point them to?
It's interesting because you asked that question, because I feel like the answer should be yes, and yet it's not. So we do have some really big websites and companies that use it. The majority of them I know under NDA, so I can't answer that. But I can say that there's some major corporations, some major news networks, and a few other groups that are using it that are very significant. I can say for sure that Apple uses it and Vice.com uses it. And I'm trying to think about if there's anybody else who's said it very publicly. The British government uses it, and there's quite a few major institutions that now teach it at the college level and Ivy League and stuff like that. But those tend to have been less like a, wow, they're using it, and now that's a really big indicator on our growth, or something else, and more like, oh, this is an indication that the growth is indeed looking the way that we thought it was, because the growth that, as we're referencing it, is how many people sign up for the conference, how many people are starting it and downloading it on GitHub, how many people follow Taylor and Twitter, or whatever else it ends up being. And that growth has happened usually prior to those seeming kind of indicators. So if the primary question was, are there any big moments where you either notice a shift happening? I think that Laravel 4 was a really significant moment, because that's when it became composer and symphony based. And that was, I think, the moment where it went from, hey, this is a really interesting framework that people are poking their eyes, you know, poking around with, to all of a sudden, wow, this is a new way of doing things. And that was right around when a lot of other frameworks started switching to use symphony components and composer and stuff like that. And Laravel was very much leading the way there. But also a lot of the other values that folks had for example, this whole being able to hot swap other things in, or using dependency injection containers, or whatever else it ends up being, Laravel tended to be at the forefront of a lot of those things. That's one. But I think another one is it just kind of inherited that kind of rapid application development mindset. Of so many people, I hear the story of, I was a PHP developer, and I just got so sold on Rails, and I was going to move over to Rails, or sometimes Django or whatever, and then Laravel came out, and it gave me all those features that all these other people were having, whether it was the Ruby gems, or rapid application development, or a really, you know, expressive and concise syntax, and all of a sudden I got it in the PHP world. And so it seems like there's less a particular moment, and more that it fit a particular kind of felt need for developers in the PHP world, and just kind of organically grew from there.
Is there a way to fingerprint a website to see if it's running Laravel?
There's some certain fingerprints you can look for that will tell if it's an unaltered version. They have to do with the session cookies and stuff like that. But there's no definitive way, because you can always just change those.
Sure.
So there's a couple defaults, but there's no like session headers or anything like that. And so for that reason, it's very difficult to do kind of like a global analysis of who's using it and who's not. So
Taylor's birthday isn't in a header.
we've actually joked about something like that. Like if you have a certain endpoint, you hit it, and then we're like, that would be awful. Nobody would ever actually do that, but that would be kind of fun. But yeah, no.
Dries's birthday is in a...
It's in an HTTP expires header.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing. Yeah, no, there's no global way. There's a way to tell on our altered installs, but the majority of the time where it'd be a site that's big enough for you to be curious about it, they've altered those signs, and it's very, very easy to alter it for that reason. So...
Matt Stauffer, I've seen you present on Vue.js before, and just to give you a little bit of background, in the Drupal world, we're talking about potentially including a client-side framework, JavaScript framework, into core, or making one, you know, the preferred one.
Mike, real quick, let's plug our podcast we did almost a year ago with Preston So talking about that in January.
Yeah. Is Vue.js like kind of the go-to client-side framework for Laravel, or is it included? And just talk a little bit about it. Is that something that should be considered if Drupal does something like this?
Yeah, for sure. It is included, and all the components that come from the native core packages that publish Views, which at this point I think is just Passport, they all come in Vue. That having been said, unincluding it is deleting two lines, and those components that come in Passport are really intended as a reference versus the thing you actually use. So Evan, the creator of Vue, spoke at Laracon. And there's all sorts of kind of partnerships together, and you know, and the reason Vue, like you can, there's a history of Vue somewhere on the internet where you can basically watch their growth curve, and it's kind of like slow growth. Taylor got really excited about Vue and started talking about it all the time, and then it really grew in the Laravel community. All of a sudden, you just see this massive, I don't know if it's hockey stick or what, but this massive bump. So there's definitely a unofficial partnership there. And it makes sense because Vue, I think it has some of the best ideas of Angular. It's got some kind of, it's very robust, and it's developed by a guy who used to work at Google. He didn't work on the Angular team, but there's definitely a little bit of influence there. It also has some of the best places of, I was trying to remember the one, there's this reference doesn't work if I can't tell you what it is, but one of the older ones where it's very simple on page, and all it does is just very simple on page data binding for one component at a time, but it doesn't make any assumptions about you building an SPA or something like that. I used to use it a lot, and I can't believe I can't remember, but it's got a lot of that.
You're not thinking Backbone, are you?
No, not Backbone. It was a little bit later than that. But it's got a lot of that because, so Vue, in order to set up a Vue component, you could just have a single, you know, div on your page that you identify as that component, and then you can include Vue from a CDN, and then you can write six lines of code, and all of a sudden you've got data binding and, you know, and all the values of Vue with no build steps, no webpack, no complexity. And so Vue wins out against React a lot of places because you can use all of the Vue ecosystem or almost none of it, and you can do more and more and more over time. And it's got its own kind of like JSX type thing as well called Vueify. So Vue is... it's easy to onboard. It is very flexible in how much you're going to use it and how complex it is. And it is extremely performant, and it has data binding in its own virtual DOM and all that kind of stuff. So it's the best, I think, kind of broad swath of all the varieties of different ways you want to use it. At Titan, we also use React a lot. But we are kind of the people pushing, hey, Laravel and React play together nicely. And we've got another guy, Titan, who loves Elm, and so he's going to be writing some stuff there. As a whole, Laravel has basically kind of like taken I won't say that. We are kind of waving goodbye to Angular and Ember usually. Those tend not to be well-loved in our communities, but that doesn't mean there's not plenty of Angular sites there as well. So all that to say, if you want a well-rounded front-end framework that people who need a full SPA down to people who just want the tiniest little component, and that work for people for varying levels of like build knowledge and front-end geekery, React is not a good fit. And Angular is not a good fit because each of them, React assumes you're going to be in their whole massive Webpack build infrastructure, and Angular, other than the fact that I just don't like working with it, assumes you're going to be making very Angular-styled SPAs. Angular components are definitely second-class citizens. Vue, however, allows you to go the whole way up and down that chain, regardless of your level of ability or knowledge, and whatever geekery you're doing or not doing, there's a space for you to do that in Vue. So that's why I think it fits well for potentially for Drupal and definitely for Laravel.
Yeah, a lot of the discussion has been involving Ember, just because Ember has like a compatible license model. It has kind of a more distributed open source community than, you know, corporate backed Angular or mm-hmm. React. How is Vue's community? Is Vue's community similar more toward, you know, React and Facebook, or more toward like Ember and community?
I would say a little bit like Ember, but it's not as rich or robust, but it's okay. Getting there. So it's more international than Ember. There's a huge Japanese and Chinese communities around it. There's, you know, they have a Gitter chat, but it's a little bit more like Laravel probably, which is one of the reasons why it's popular. It's not a corporate back. It's a single person backing it. He does this full time now. He's got a Patreon helping him just do this full time, and he quit his job sometime this year based on mm-hmm. the money he's getting from that Patreon. It is very community focused, but the international nature of the community makes it feel a little bit less cohesive than maybe a lot of the ones that are very US based or at least English language based. Ember is very mature. Ember is doing open source right. I love and respect Ember so much. That having been said, I don't think that Ember really makes a lot of sense unless you're doing full Ember single page apps. And that's the problem. Like a lot of people, especially people who aren't full-time front-end developers, don't want to do SPAs. They just want to do reactive components. React works great for reactive components, but then you have all the problems with React. So Vue is special in that it has a community somewhat like Ember, but you can also use it just a little bit at a time.
It makes a lot of sense. So let's talk a little bit about your book. You just wrote a new book, right?
I did, by just, if we mean started in July of 2015, but it just released. So yes,
while you up and running. While you had a new baby.
Yeah, that's right.
Do you sleep?
I remember. I remember that was a thing at some point in my past. So it's the high level kind of idea of Laravel up and running. There's two primary goals. One of them is to help a relatively capable PHP developer or someone who knows PHP in general learn everything they need to know from never having learned Laravel or visited the website once and thought it was pretty, the whole way through to feeling confident writing Laravel apps. And so it starts from, hey, the first thing every Laravel app ever has is routing. So chapter one is routing. And the second thing is almost every single Laravel app has views. Okay, chapter two is views. And so the hope is that, you know, you get two chapters in, get excited and go build a thing and then come back and read chapter three and four once you need the database and the whatever else. And so that's the one goal. But the second goal is people often ask me, how do I learn Laravel? And I almost always tell them, go read the docs, which are fantastic. It's the best documentation of any open source framework I've ever seen. And then go sign up for Laracasts, because Jeffrey Way, and speaking of watershed moments, when Jeffrey Way, who used to be the big NetTuts guy, when he decided to go whole hog on Laravel, that must be, I've never looked at the numbers, but like, he's the reason I started using Laravel. And I think there's a huge number of people who just said, I trust that guy. If that guy says Laravel's what's up, that's what's up. And so he moved over, he left NetTuts, and he created Laracast.com, which is just videos teaching you about everything you ever need. So I normally would tell people, go read the docs, go sign up for Laracasts. That having been said, it was never like a, and now here's the place to just learn A to B, A to Z, I guess. Mm-hmm. And so my hope is, and now the answer can be, go buy this book. It's going to give you all the basics. Go to Laracasts for your like kind of ongoing learning. And of course, always read the docs.
Yeah, absolutely.
Why is your documentation so good?
One of the reasons Laravel is good in general is because Taylor's extremely empathetic. He spends a lot of time really focusing on how to make it work well for people, and he thinks about their experiences and what they understand and don't understand. As open source people, we tend to be bad communicators, bad at empathizing with people who don't have the exact same things that we have in our brains as, you know, they do. Mm-hmm. And so Taylor's really good at that, strikingly so for a developer and open source person. And so he, first of all, wrote good docs in the first because he knew that one of the things that helped Codeigniter the best was extremely approachable docs and a very welcoming community. So that was like on day one, good docs, welcoming community were at the top of his list. But now, every single time he has a little bit of free time, he goes back and reads through the entire documentation, trying to put his brain in the space of a new developer who's never heard of it before, and then rewrites things over and over, always iterating to try and make it clearer and clearer and clearer for somebody who doesn't understand how it works.
So the answer is because it became a priority, or it was a priority.
Yep, it was. Yep, exactly.
So what can other PHP projects learn from Laravel? What can Symfony learn from Laravel, vice versa, besides great docs?
Yeah, well, I think that great docs are really an indicator of it, which is that Laravel has gotten a lot of flack from other folks in the PHP community because they see Laravel as too sales-oriented, right? Like, it's too much about, like, you know, trying to have a really pretty sales site or whatever else it ends up being. And I think that the criticism there is, well, it feels like you're sellouts. Aren't we all trying to share stuff with each other? But really what's important is Laravel's understanding that people don't just get motivated by reading literally the entire code base of every framework and then making, you know, a objective decision about it. There's a lot of things that go into it, and a lot of them have to do with the feel. How do I feel when I'm using this? Do I feel I can get the answers? Do I feel confused? Do I feel overwhelmed? And so there's a lot of aspects of Laravel that just have to do with making it feel like on day one and forever going forward, you're going to feel like you're understood, that the information you need is available to you, that things that are annoying get less annoying when you're doing them in Laravel. And it's very non-technical, right? It's very, you know, high-level emotional empathy type stuff. And I think that that's one of the things that sets it apart the most. As PHP developers, we tend to be a little bit neckbeardier than a lot of other kind of like Ruby or something like that. And I think that Laravel is probably the least neckbeardy. And some of the other communities, especially when they would criticize Laravel, tend to be in neckbeardy ways. That's the way they could learn from Laravel. But Laravel's got plenty to learn. I mean, like, for example, Laravel is I have used Laravel in the most massive and complex enterprise systems you can possibly imagine. However, we still don't have a reputation as being, like, the thing people turn to for enterprise. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's just because there's not a lot of Laravel people talking loudly about their enterprise work. But I would bet that there's probably some specific things that we don't have in there because the primary people who develop it, like Laravel, Taylor doesn't do a lot of enterprise work. the Symfony folks do a lot of enterprise work. So I bet that there's a lot for us to learn from Symfony and Zend about what it looks like to work in just massively complex systems with 500 people. Now, there are plenty of Laravel apps with massive enterprise, 500 people, crazy load balance, IT departments, blah, blah, blah. That's already a thing. But it's not a priority that Taylor or Jeffrey or I think about every day. Mm-hmm. And so there's probably places for us to learn there for sure.
So I have one final question for you right here.
Yeah, let's go.
You know this is coming here. So to know a language is to hate it. So what really sucks about Laravel?
My least favorite thing about working in Laravel is stack traces, debugging stack traces, often in tests, when the thing you're working on has any level of front-end component. So Laravel has an integration testing framework, and it has a view, its own view compiler called Blade. And both of them are amazing and brilliant. And for example, the integration testing framework lets you say, make a test that says, visit slash login, type, matt@mattstauffer.co in the email field, and then type password in the password field, and then click the submit button, and then assert that I'm redirected to this page with this success message on it. And then you run that unit test and it works. It's brilliant. That having been said, when something doesn't go right, because there's so much magic going on there, sometimes it's really difficult to understand what actually went wrong. And instead of just being able to read your stack trace output, you might have to like tail the server logs or something like that. Similarly, when you get an error that happens inside of some PHP code in one of your templates or some Blade code in one of your templates, the templates go through these compilation processes and caching processes. So often the stack trace for that is 50 lines long. So basically, anytime I'm doing debugging and stack tracing on things that involve kind of the view layers, it can be really difficult to find what's going on. And it's something that I really, now that my book is done, I'm actually hoping to be able to help provide a fix there. But I think that the day in, day out, the thing that frustrates me the most about Laravel is that, for sure.
Thanks, Matt.
Yeah, thanks, Matt.
Andrew Berry, you thought the website was pretty. You going to go back and look at it again now?
Yeah, this time I'm actually going to read what I'm looking at. It's fucking lovely, nice design.
Awesome. Matt Robison, if they come back to Louisville, it sounds like you'll be there again.
Yeah, I'd love to go back.
And Mike, I heard that Lullabot is quitting all of their Drupal work and moving to Laravel.
Yeah. And .NET.
That isn't the case. But, you know, we're always open to new ideas and new technologies. And you know, thanks, Matt Stauffer, for joining us and teaching us a thing or two today.
Yeah, thanks y'all for having me.
Thanks, Matt. And then we can kind of alternate. Holy shit, my puppy has my shoe. Hold on.